great work. If anybody wants to go back and listen to the show with her, it was called Pussy Power, and you can check that out. But I'm so happy to have you here. Can you give us a little bit of a backstory about how you got into this?
Yeah, over 6 years ago, I had one of those death by female events, and I use that tongue in cheek just to describe that eviscerated feeling that men in their 40s and 50s typically get when they find out that the life they thought they were going to live in marriage and love and relationship is not going to happen. And I got notice. I got notice that things weren't happy and things weren't going to work out after 28 years of marriage. And, you know, I'm the typical privileged white guy, good jobs, decent money, vacations, had a pretty cool life for 28 years. And so I felt a little awkward in thinking that this was a huge event or something I should build into something as a business. What I found out that the death by female event for me was a much, much bigger glimpse into the world of insecurity and fear and shame in both men and women. And what I found out is that if I was to build a business out of helping men, I would first need to come through that open wound of shame. And it's triggered in my business mostly through relationship. I work with heterosexual couples mostly through that relationship trauma.
Mm, so interesting. And I love that you bring up shame, because shame is such a huge part of the experience that we have. And it's such a damaging part. You know, somebody said to me, my ex-boyfriend, I don't know if he got it from NA or where he heard about it originally, but I always remember it. He talked about the distinction between guilt and shame. And guilt is I did bad, shame is I am bad. And when we start getting into that, we toss that word shame, and you know, you should be ashamed of yourself and shameful and all of that. We toss it around like it's not a big deal. But oh my God, it is such a big deal. It totally defines who we are and is so crushing. So how do we start moving away from that?
Well, you start with the big guns, don't you?
Oh, you know, just the odd easy question here for you.
How about where do you live, Steve? I was ready for that one. Now, how do we move away from shame, right? I am sure you're a fan of Dr. Brené Brown's work in shame research in men and women. And she says that one of the biggest shame triggers in women is the fear of not being good enough, not being smart enough, pretty enough, thin enough, whatever. Not enough. And in men, she says the shame trigger is most often I'm not strong enough. I'm a big pussy. I'm not powerful enough. I'm not man enough. And she's right. 100% of my clients that I work with have that not enough feeling in the sense of not being manly enough, masculine enough, powerful enough. I can't even save my marriage. I suck so badly. That shame. And as you know, she says the antidote to shame is empathy. I add forgiveness on that, forgiveness and empathy. And first, that comes for yourself. It's that feeling of thinking you might be a mistake, you might be totally screwed up, as opposed to having made mistakes. I believe that having forgiveness for yourself and looking deeper into who you really are and having empathy for the journey of yourself as a human being. In my business, I take men through the men's journey. I use tools like Dr. Glover's No More Mr. Nice Guy and other works for men that describe the male journey, especially over the last few decades, that is deeply ridden in shame of not being man enough. And so once we understand how the mouse trap is made, you start understanding how to get out of the trap of shame. And it's an intellectual dive, but it's also extremely vulnerable and very emotional, which is where a lot of people don't think men like to go. But I've made a business out of finding sensitive, vulnerable, intelligent men in the world. And there are millions of them, let me tell you.
Yeah, well, it's certainly interesting because I've just started dating, and my road this year of awareness around men and some of the challenges has really given me a different insight to what's going on with men. Why do you think it is such a demand for it now? Like, I didn't hear my dad ever making plans to get together with guys and talk about their feelings and, you know, recover from the death by female. So is this a new phenomenon?
I don't think it's new. One guy said on a YouTube comment the other day, he goes, I know this sounds weird, but I just want to tell you how good it was to watch your video. And I felt like you really understood and heard me, who I was. And I know that's weird for me to say. And my response to him was that it's the most perfectly normal human thing to ever do, is to want to connect with somebody on a vulnerable, honest level. And for men, it's only been made to be wrong over the last few decades, right? So it's a different perspective. I don't know there is a big demand for it. I tell my guys that they're part of the 5% club, and that 95% of men in general wind up pissing themselves in wheelchairs in nursing homes. And the 5% club is the one who's emerging, is finding out that you'll never be more powerful and more impactful and influential and effective as a human being as to when you own your vulnerability and you own that sensitive, caring side of you, and you rock that. That's where power is and influence. And guys who are ready for this kind of work, who have had the wound that I talk about, they're ready to learn that. And it's true. I don't know if there's a big demand for it or not. I think the sensitivity movement, we call them in Colorado snags, sensitive new age guys, the spirituality movement for men has become more popular. So there's a little bit more permission for men to talk deeper and go deeper. But I still think it's a 5% club in general.
Really? Because, you know, I'm always really surprised, like when I start talking to men about MGTOW or feminism or equality, how that's sort of impacting men. They're all like, oh my God, you know about that stuff? And there seems to be this relief that I can have these conversations with people about this. So I think it does seem to be really very much in demand. Whether people are reaching out for it or not is a totally different thing. I think it's really in demand internally with people, with men. Yeah. They just don't know how to reach out and actually, or if there's even a possibility.
Yeah.
But I am finding more and more men are trying to siphon through it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's a lot of men like me out there trying to do this work. And there's a lot of women like you as well. I know a lot of women coaches are focused on men. And one thing I need to tell you, the reason you're finding, you personally are finding, that men will say, oh my gosh, you know about that? And then they open up and they become vulnerable and honest with you, is because you're a bit of a unicorn when it comes to women. You're a freaking unicorn, Alice. Right? Because, because you do listen, you do have empathy, you don't have judgment, you practice what you preach as far as not, you know, judging other people. And you're so mature and honest that you don't take things personally. You know, one reason I wanted to come on here is that Facebook post you made. I sent this to my guy. You said an unhealed person can find offense in pretty much anything someone does, but a healed person understands that the actions of others have absolutely nothing to do with them. Each day you get to decide which one you'll be. And that's who you are. And that's why dudes will talk to you, but you're a unicorn. I just want to tell you that.
Well, thank you. And I feel so privileged to be able to have worked through that, because a year ago, I don't think this would have happened. But this year has certainly been an experience and an unveiling of ideas that I had that I didn't even know that I had about men. And once you start going down that rabbit hole, you know, I talked a really good game, but I had no idea how flawed my thinking was. And the conversations and the connections that I'm making now are so much better. And I really wish this for more women, because I'm having such true and honest conversations with men that I never could have had before. And I think my life is so much richer having had this opportunity, for sure. Yeah. And then, of course, with people like you who are so willing to honor me and humor me as I fumble my way through all of this, because it does often at times feel like I'm fumbling and trying to find the right words. And it's a fascinating process for sure. And, you know, you mentioned, Brené Brown, and she, I just finished listening to her Men, Women, and Worthiness. And what I found super interesting in that is that she talked about how women want men who are sensitive and will cry, but as soon as men do that, women turn them away. And so what I'm seeing there is this huge disconnect for women about what they say they want and what they really want. And I don't know, I can't speak to whether or not men are doing the same thing, but I definitely see it in women more so now than I've ever seen before.
Yeah, well, the analogous thing between on the male side is that men say they like to have spirited, independent, strong women in their life. And then when they get one, they totally fuck it up, right? Because they secretly don't know what to do with that person. They think they like it because the Hollywood version of that woman is very sexy and very independent. She even initiates sex, for heaven's sake. But when he lives with one or gets, you imagine. But when he starts dating that woman and starts getting challenged, his little boy insecurity starts getting challenged by her, all of a sudden he's not so sure. Mm-hmm. And so when women say they want a man who's caring and sensitive and vulnerable, the little girl inside so many women is afraid of a man who appears to be weak. And this is Dr. Brené Brown's words, weak. They can get repulsed and disgusted by the show of apparent weakness or softness. Mm-hmm. And it's not conscious, right? It's anthropological, it's or socialized, whatever you want to call it. But Brené told the story of her husband coming home from work and having a problem with his business and something. And she instantly said, I don't want to hear about this. And she realized she was doing the same. She's shutting him down. She said, I am the patriarchy. I'm the one who's doing this.
Yeah. Well, and I think it is part of our DNA. And I, when we're having these conversations, I think it's so important that we recognize that. Like for our biology, for our survival, we have counted on men protecting us and being strong and not showing weakness. Our species wouldn't have probably survived had men not stepped into that role. Yeah. And we forget that. And we forget that honoring piece. I know as women, I did, that appreciation that we've gotten as far as we were because men acted like men and women acted like women. And when I say that to people, I get so much shit. Like, it's
I can imagine.
But there is such a truth to it. And there's a symmetry and a beauty that is involved in that as well. But it's also not the whole picture.
Yeah. Guys ask me that if I'm supposed to be this rock for her and be this emotional lighthouse of safety and stableness and groundedness, when do I get to lean on her? When do I get to fall into her chest and feel her warmth and her arms comfort me? Where do I go for this? And you want to cry, right? Like, oh, you poor guy.
Yes.
Because they feel like they can't do that with the women. One thing that men have lost is the ability to do that with other men. So one of my phrases is take it to the men. If you don't have a very strong community of committed, initiated, intelligent men who understand this work, who can love and support each other, you're kind of screwed. And then most guys these days do not have a tribe, even a one-person tribe, right? Another person in their life. And so they're relying on their woman to be this source of validation and affirmation and well-being and just overall sense of okayness. And that leads right to the video that I did called Why You Need to Stop Chasing Women, which has got like 330,000 hits on it now. It hit a nerve. People wanted to know what I was going to say about not chasing women. And a lot of them watched the first 2 minutes and thought I was saying, you shouldn't, I was a MGTOW, right? Men going their own way.
Yeah.
And the point of the video is that you need to stop chasing external versions of affirmation and validation and worthiness. You need to stop chasing that around you in your whole life. And the biggest problem men have with women these days, without a tribe of men to support and encourage and help them grow, they're trying to get everything from women. And so in addition to chasing them for sex, they're trying to chase them for emotional well-being, for worthiness, validation, and masculine affirmation. And it's a big problem.
Oh, for sure. I think so. And, you know, I was in my Toastmasters group, and one of the gentlemen in the group has been with Toastmasters for a very, very long time. And he talked about it was an all males group when he first joined. And there was an all female group, but they were separate. And the women in my group were like, well, that's wrong. It was wrong that men had their own group, but it wasn't wrong that women had their own group. And I found it fascinating. And so there's definitely been this taking away from men of a space to hang out with men. And my son and I talk about this a lot too, but he does sports. And so then it's okay to be hanging out with other dudes because you're playing football and there's only dudes, or an all men's baseball team. But there has to be an excuse, it seems, in order for men to justify hanging out with men, just men. And so do you see that changing? Do you see that as even being a problem?
Yeah, well, there's first, guys have a hard time being around other guys who can talk at the level they want. Guys who are ready for deeper connection and intellectual and emotional intimacy with other men have a hard time finding men who can do that with them. So they end up talking about the Denver Broncos and the last elk hunt, right? And that's as deep as they go. When they get the invitation to come to, like, this, we have my third annual ranch retreat coming up here in Loveland, Colorado. It sold out in 3 days. 10 men in 3 days sold it out. The Mexico one last November, just a month ago, sold out in 2 days. So when you get to the right men at the right time and you invite them to a place where it's just dudes doing dude stuff, talking about love, life, marriage, sexuality, shame, they show up in droves. But again, it's this 5% sliver, I think. It's a lot of people, but it's still not mainstream.
Mm-hmm. No. Well, and I think there's a real risk for men to step into that space as well. And let's face it, women have been practicing this for a really long time.
Yeah.
Women have always, you know, even back in the day when we were being, you know, oppressed in the 50s, we were hanging out with our girlfriends and having, well, I shouldn't say we, I wasn't alive then, but women were hanging out, having lunch with their friends in the afternoon, and they were having this bonding and they were talking about their lives and their feelings and all of that. And so we've been doing it for so long. It's second nature to us to sit down with women and have a chat about things. But men, they were off working while we were exploring our inner workings.
Yeah, we're also avoiding the vulnerability of talking about feelings because we were told that's how we're supposed to do that. Back to that 95-year-old guy in a wheelchair pissing himself in a nursing home. Even today, you'll go in a nursing home and watch those guys in the corner watching the women collaborate, communicating, supporting, encouraging, and loving each other. And the men typically are on the fringes watching that happen. Mm-hmm. One of my missions is to change the future nursing home scene.
Yeah, well, that would be great. Because I've seen it, we've done work in them. And then, yeah, we are definitely, and I wasn't entirely sure what I was seeing. So thanks for shedding some light on that. Like, if this is, I'm constantly learning and recognizing and seeing things as they come up. Yeah. And I really love that you talk about that worthiness piece too, because, you know, I'm doing this My Part movement, really working on, if we understand our own worth, we don't need it from somebody else. We can bond and we can join and we can have conversations, but ultimately that worth has to come from within. And I say to people, like, you were born worthy, and we have to get back to understanding that, right? It's like this little tiny sperm, and I say this all the time, finds this little tiny egg, and they made you, which makes you a miracle. Because if one sperm had swam faster, you would be somebody else. And so, you know, there's this beautiful recognition that we are miracles just by the simple act that we are here. Then society tells us that we are not worthy. And whenever we can get back to that place of understanding that we are, then we can move forward to have real conversations from a place of desire as opposed to fear or need. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I love what you said.
Thank you. Now you talked about MGTOW. Let's talk a little bit about that. So that's men going their own way, shortened to MGTOW. So you had made reference to the fact that people thought your video was associated with that. Yes.
Yeah.
That
some did.
So explain that to our listeners.
Well, I'm not a member of the MGTOW movement, but I read enough of the red pill stuff and MGTOW stuff to understand when I see a human being coming from a place of skepticism, doubt, uncertainty, fear, and shame, it's an unhealthy spot. And I see a man talking from a place of self-reliance, confidence, love, and generosity. Most of the guys I see talking about MGTOW, especially the guys who commented in my video, have this very scared, unhealthy, shameful, angry, suspicious, resentful tone to them. Mm-hmm. And so you can see that when a human being is coming from that, they have no choice but to join a tribe of men who believe safety is in numbers and safety is away from the oppressors, the women, the ones you can't trust. And so I say there's a healthy and an unhealthy way to be a man who doesn't date women, right? Or just cuts them out of your life. There's nothing that says we have to pair up with women, right? But if you're going to do it, you better do it in a healthy way, a place where you're doing it from a place of clarity and confidence and love and self-reliance and having a mission that just so happens not to include women. There's a healthy way to go MGTOW and there's an unhealthy way. I'd say 95% of those guys have some unhealthy crap going on. I don't mean to don't mean to insult them, but I spend a lot of time working with men to get healthier through divorce, through all kinds of problems. And unhealthy behavior is caustic. It's very toxic. And that's what I see sometimes.
Yeah, I spent some time on the forums reading this stuff, and oh my goodness, it was shocking for me as a woman to read some of these comments and think, oh, there's so much hostility there. And then I'm thinking, okay, so where does that come from? How does that happen? Where, you know, and you can see the deterioration just through their stories, and it is super unfortunate. And I think this is like that double-edged sword of feminism, right? Like, we are creating this whole world of men who are feeling oppressed. And, you know, I've been spending time toying with this lately, so I don't have this completely figured out in my brain yet. So maybe you can give some input. But, you know, we talk about when women were oppressed by men. And the way I see it is that that was how society functioned. Men went to work, women stayed home, took care of the kids. That was just the acceptable way at the time for men and women to exist together. Now we're moving away from that. And I see women oppressing men through no other reason than the fact that they want to. And I think it is just so dangerous. Like, we're better than that. Like, we have to be better than that. We can't say we were oppressed and now I'm going to oppress you just to get even, when the impression that we were experiencing was simply the norm. Yeah. I don't, and sadly, I think oppressing men is becoming more normal, and that's a little bit scary.
Men bashing is fashionable these days. You know, you take any of the new movements, and there's an element of fear, anger, and retaliation getting even, getting back. And when men and women retaliate and get defensive and need to get even and get back, that comes from fear, right? Marianne Williamson talks about we're either coming from love or fear. And coming from fear and insecurity is always going to create bad behavior and bad decisions. Mm-hmm. Always. And when you look at the MGTOW guys, what you see as hostile is actually fearful. And when you see a biting, kicking horse or a dog attacking you, it's a fear. It's all fear coming out. I use animals a lot, and I say horses are like women just to piss them off. But
there
both,
are worse things to be compared to.
Yeah, but we have to have empathy for the fact that human beings, for the most part, are scared, insecure people. And this road that you and I are on is, what does it mean to become self-reliant in a very healthy, secure, confident sense? And I maintain, until you reach that point, until you get on that path, it's impossible to have empathy. And it's impossible to be generous with love without strings. Mm-hmm. Fearful men love with strings. Fearful women love with suspicion and expectation. And so my role with men, I say you can't have a healthy relationship without a healthy man. John Gottman stuff in his marriage research shows that when a man is insecure and unhealthy, that the chances of divorce are in the 80%, right? He has a much bigger influence on the sustainability of the marriage when a man is healthy and secure. And so that's why I pick men. Really, the truth, I pick men is I just love working with men. I know men, they're my tribe. But the ultimate goal is two healthy people coming together. I don't believe that the best relationship a man and woman can have are two people who see each other's unhealed childhood wounds and spend the rest of their lives licking and nurturing those wounds, trying not to antagonize each other. Although some therapists think that's the highest form of relationship, I say bullshit. You can do better than that, right?
I would hope so.
Yeah. And so I'm trying to help men get there first. And there's no way they can lead emotionally the relationship to a place it needs to get to until they get there first, independent from her, and finally detaching from the need for her to make him feel like he's worthy.
Mm-hmm. So I just want some clarification here. You had mentioned that when men are unhealthy in marriages, it's like 80% divorce. Are you saying that the success of a marriage relies more strongly on a man's healthiness? Or
I'm saying Dr. John Gottman's research says that. Yeah,
really?
He's all research based marriage.
So we get to be a bunch of crazy bitches as long as you guys are healthy. That's fantastic. That is super.
You know, that's the most common comment on my video. The most common, what you just said there. Oh, so they get to be totally unaccountable, irresponsible, crazy bitches, and we're the ones who have to step up. And I always go, dude, And the only answer is, do you not want to be a responsible, accountable, healthy man with or without her? Do you not want that?
Yeah. And the reality is when we're healthy, we attract healthy.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. I have to say it.
Yeah. But if you're in a relationship and you're a healthy, mature, self-reliant woman who is with an unhealthy man, the odds of that relationship staying together are less than the opposite. He's going to get all pissed off and he's going to leave or cheat or find somebody who doesn't challenge him so much. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's interesting what you're saying about men and women, strong women, because I have definitely found that. I've been single most of my life. I've had my own businesses. I'm very independent. And yeah, I get that. You're great, but can you just need me more? I'm like, no, actually, I can want you, but I don't want to need you. And there seems to be this sort of disconnect around that too. So it's an interesting journey. And yeah, I would rather, and I'm at this place in my life where I get to decide, I would rather stay single and true to who I am than get in a relationship and have to somehow become something that makes somebody else feel better. Yeah.
I get it.
Wow. So you were talking about these retreats that you do, and you do them, sorry, every 6 months or yearly?
We keep adding more. We have two Mexico ones that we did one in November. We have another one coming up in April, the ranch retreats in May. And I do retreats here at my little ranch in Colorado about three times a year. So about once a quarter, we've got something going. I say we, I have a business partner, Tim Wade, who I do my retreats with.
Cool. And so how do people find out more information about this?
Wow. They could just go to the website, www.goodguys2greatmen.com. It's all together with the number two in there, goodguys2greatmen.com. There's over 150 videos that guys binge watch all the time. They tell me I've got 200 blog articles and newsletters. There's a lot of free content. Podcasts like this one are on there. So I give away more than I sell. Mm-hmm. And finding out it's a pretty good business plan.
Well, true, right? Because people, you know, I think we need to warm up to these ideas as well. Yeah. Right? It's a tough one to just sort of break into. And your videos are great. I think you deal with some really great topics. And I've spent some time on your site and I've learned things and it's seen different perspectives. So for me, I thank you. If men should stop chasing women, then how does that impact the whole dating thing?
If men should stop chasing women, how does that impact the whole dating thing? So let's remember, I'm not talking about not pursuing, right?
Okay.
Pursuing is different than chasing. And in the metaphor that I use in the video, chasing women in an unhealthy way is asking them out on dates, stalking them on Facebook or Match or Tinder, in an effort to get them to like you so they will touch you, hold you, kiss you, and fuck you, right? That's the only reason men are chasing women. The only reason your life will turn to crap. You'll find out that you're living in an empty shell of masculinity. So if you want to pursue women, if you want to pursue them for intimacy, understand, and when a client told me this the other day, once he learned about emotional, intellectual, spiritual, and physical intimacy, he said, I feel like I have 10 blocks on my coffee table. And number 9 and 10 are kissing and screwing. But I feel like I've totally missed out on 1 through 8, which is that intellectual, emotional, and spiritual type of connection that he's been totally avoiding with his wife because, you know, men want sex for connection and women want connection for sex crap. He believed that if he could only get the kissing and the screwing, he could finally connect with her emotionally. And he's starting to understand the way the world works. He actually prefers to connect emotionally and spiritually and intellectually. It's just that he feels like he's never had the tools or the courage to do it. And so now he's playing in the playground of those 8 blocks. What it means for men in dating is that once they learn that, dating becomes a pursuit of high quality conversations. Dating becomes a pursuit of connection and sharing and wonderment and learning and growing, even before you get to kiss and screw, right? So what would that be like? To be able to date and do that. Women don't believe that men actually want that. The truth is men want that desperately. They just are looking for permission and tools to do it. And a woman who knows how to elicit that from him too.
Right. Now, do you think that this whole Tinder match thing has actually made things more difficult? Like, or has it made it, because I talked to my son about it too, and I talked to other women who are dating, and they're just like, if I don't say yes, they're just going to go on to the next person who is going to say yes. So is there an encouragement with these apps to actually have men stay just pursuing sex?
I think the result is that, because it's lazy, right? It's a McDonald's drive-through at midnight and you're hungry, right? It's that bad. It's that unhealthy, because it doesn't require you to have to do any work. It doesn't require you to have a conversation, to actually think about what you think about. And and you try to write this perfect profile to get somebody to say yes to meeting up with you. And now you're at Starbucks with a stranger with sexual tension, and you haven't even begun to scratch the surface. Now, there's success stories, of course. I generalize there. Right. Some people use it to get to Starbucks and then build from there, and they have a very successful dating experience. But it's a numbers game. So guys are taught it's a numbers game. Commit to a schedule of posting and responding 20 a week, and you're going to get your numbers, and you're going to get laid, blah, 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 blah.
And there's algorithms for this.
Yeah. It's the shallow end of the pool. And I work with guys who want to work in that end of the pool where you have to tread water, where intimacy and vulnerability and honesty and connection are really edgy shit. And they don't like being that cotton candy 3-foot end where there's nothing but sex and shallowness, mm-hmm. right? Back to the Denver Broncos and the last elk hunt. Their guys are deeper than that.
I went to a hockey game with my son, and every time I turned around, he was talking to dudes about football at a hockey game, right? And I posted on Facebook, I'm like, this is like, I'm so envious of how men can connect that way. Now, I understand there needs to be like a deeper connection and more conversations and that sort of thing, but I was blown away watching this experience of these strange men, or stranger to each other, they weren't strange, just bonding over this stuff. And so when you talk about the whole Bronco thing, I can't help but think of how guys do it. And then I saw my son talking to a guy, and I'm like, at the mall, and I'm like, are you guys talking football? Like, what is going on here? Like, I want some of that.
Yeah. And that's fun. And I don't mean to dismiss the fun things in life, right? I'm an ex-jock myself, and I watch as much football as anybody else does. But when it comes to knowing where you're going in life, one thing I work with guys on is having a mission and seeing part of their mission being personal growth. And part of being in a path of personal growth is knowing who you allow into your life and who you don't allow into your life. Mm-hmm. If there are three types of people, and I generalize here, there's three types of people: those who drain the shit out of you, those who sustain you as a human being, like brothers, sisters, and guys at the hockey game talking about football. Those are the B-level people. But the A-level people challenge you, encourage you, and inspire you, and energize you. And most people have very few to zero A-level people in their life. Mm-hmm. Now, the B-level people, that's fine too, but you can't live in the B zone if you want to grow. Qualification there is, if you want to grow, you're going to have to feel some discomfort in your life. Mm-hmm. Those are the guys I attract.
Right. And it's cool. Well, and what I was seeing was this need for connection, mm-hmm. like this willingness to just dive into a conversation with another dude. Like, there just was clearly this sense of wanting to bond. So I think your 5% is growing, and I think there's definitely an awareness and a need and an energy around it, which is super cool. Yeah.
I give guys a scorecard to help them understand where they are in their personal growth path. I'll just show you a picture of this real quick. Kind of looks like this. They get to rate themselves. And one of the things is the depth of connection that they're willing to have. How many places in their life are they willing to get uncomfortable? And so while we're connecting and bonding with their brothers, how often are they pursuing the challenge of challenging what other men think, right? Mm-hmm. Like, if one guy is being totally nasty to women or treating somebody bad, how willing are you to challenge him and say, dude, not cool, right?
Right.
That's an evolution of masculinity, getting to a point to where you're secure enough in what you believe, you're willing to call out things that you see as wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that leads me to this sort of curious sort of shit testing that happens. right? Where there is this testing that seems to underlie a lot of our behaviors, and men and women both engage in this. And I was told of an example of when a guy will walk into a boardroom of colleagues and tell a dirty joke, and then assesses how everybody responds to find out who's his people. So, and I think it's kind of brilliant. I don't know if it needs to be a dirty joke to do it, but it does sort of cut to that quick about who can you identify with, who you can't. So how do we sort of have that shit testing still going on, where you get to see who your people are, that's so quick and effective without it being negative like that?
Let me see if I understand your question. I thought you were going somewhere else with shit testing, which most women, men say women do to them. You're talking about it's the test to find out who your peeps are, right? This is the test to find out how your peeps are. I think there needs to be some authenticity and honesty around it. I think if you're playing a game, trying to polarize people, trying to get some people to like you or not like you on purpose so you can find out who your people are, it's probably immature. I think you need to be more honest about it.
But do you think, I'm not even sure there's an awareness. Like, you know, when I talk to, because I've asked a lot of guys about this, right? And they're like, oh, yeah, maybe, I guess I do that. Like, there doesn't even seem to, like when I pointed out to them or asked them about it, then now they've got this consciousness around it. But they're all like, oh, yeah, I remember this time when they always asked, you know, and they all have examples of when it's happened, but they never saw it for what it was, because it's just a form of communication that we don't process or spend time trying to understand, because we don't even know it's a thing to understand because it's so automatic. It's like women are, we're so covert in the way that we approach things, right? And we don't even think about us being passive aggressive about things, because that's just how we survived, right?
I know. You get women can size up men in the first 30 seconds. They'll know whether or not she's going to sleep with them. But also with other women, women know whether or not she's in the tribe based on how she dresses, how she looks, what she laughs at, that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. It's a human condition, I suppose, that we do size each other up. My paradigm so often is in this sales and marketing thing where I'm promoting my business. I purposely polarize, right? In my videos, I'll cuss or I'll say something that will piss somebody off. And so I know with what I'm doing through my coaching business, I'm making some people hate me on purpose just so they don't bug me. So it's very conscious, but this is something we do unconsciously too, or subconsciously, I believe, on a daily basis, trying to figure out who we like and who we don't.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think it's been part of our survival, right? And we can't ignore that survival part of our species. Like, there's that, who am I safe with? Who's going to help advance me? Where will I survive the longest?
Who will support me? Who will agree with me? Who has my back?
Who will feed into all my insecurities and help me stay with my, you know, 2-year-old damaged self, right? Like, if that's where I want to stay, I need to make sure I'm with somebody who's going to help me stay there.
Yeah.
Right.
I tell guys dating after divorce, they're always concerned about what to do, who to be on the date after they divorce. And I tell them tongue in cheek, your job is to scare them away. Your job is to be so authentic, so clear, so honest, so good in yourself, and so generous with your time and your attention and your presence, that if that scares her off, good. The quicker, the better. Right.
Yeah. If she's not.
What's that?
Fail fast.
Fail fast, right? And they don't like that because, well, they'll feel like a failure if they don't want a second date. Why do you want a second date with somebody who is afraid of honesty? Mm-hmm. Why do you want them?
Yeah. Well, and have you heard of Kyle Cease?
No, I haven't.
He does this great... Oh, yeah, it's okay. You're just looking like very angelic. He says, you know, if you're in an elevator and you see this beautiful woman, don't try to come up with some great one-liner. Just say, I have no idea what to say to you right now, but I just think you're beautiful and I want to say hi. If she rejects you, fantastic. You know she's not for you. And if she doesn't, fantastic, because, you know, she's going to understand and appreciate your honesty. And I just thought that was just such a cool way of just telling us to just not be afraid to be true and authentic. And because if you can't show up in the elevator with some stranger, honestly, like, how are you going to do that down the road?
I love it. I love it.
Yeah.
15 or 20 years ago, I was in Chicago, I think, somewhere in an elevator with a woman, just she and I, and I was there for a conference. I said, are you here for the conference? And she gave me a quick yes and no eye contact. And I said, oh, cool, me too. My name's Steve. And she didn't reply. And it was about 5 hours later, she found me in some, you know, room in the hotel where we were gathering and said, she goes, you know what? In that elevator 5 hours ago, I was a real bitch and I'm sorry about that. She was doing what any woman would do, trapped in an elevator with a dude. But she had decided that she was acting from fear because all I did was say hi. Mm-hmm. But I thought that was cool. We had a nice week.
Well, that's good. Well, and I think we have to pay attention to how we're showing up in those kind of ways and then own that part in our interactions. And I think it's beautiful that she had the wherewithal to do that and to want to go back and repair something, because that stuff, I think it's energy and it stays with us.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then of course it's going to impact you going forward to some extent. You know, next time you're in the elevator, do you say hi to somebody? Like, there's this domino effect of what happens. And I don't think we should change who we are based on how people react to us. Mm-hmm. The reality though is that we are going to sometimes do that.
Yeah, I agree.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Oh my God. Okay. So when men are starting to feel insecure or rejected or any of those things, what do some sort of tools that they can use, maybe take away from this conversation of getting to a place where they are approaching things a little bit in a more constructive, healthier way?
I'll go deep right off on this, because I tell men, especially guys married 15, 20, 30 years, there's this thing that we do, whether it's the first time we've met a woman, asking her for a date, or trying to initiate sex with a woman we've been with for 30 years. There's this secret that we don't admit, and that unlike anybody else in our life, people at work, friends, family, nobody else on the planet has the power to make us feel eviscerated and unworthy, ugly, unattracted, and undesirable more than the person, the woman we're with. And I kid around, I say it's like James Bond's little lipstick tube of whoop ass. And what you did when you met her, you put this in her purse, and it is the secret power to make you feel like shit, like you're unworthy and unvaluable, undesirable. And you did this, dude. You did this with your own thoughts, with your own thought process of who you are, what you believe, and what your own value is. You've given somebody the power to hurt you. So you can't interact with her without the fear of rejection, the fear of being made to feel like you're not good enough. And this is on you. It's not on her. Women get to say no anytime they want to say no, right? They get to reject. That's their deal. Doesn't mean anything about you. So the tool is that don't take it personally. Of course, the first reaction is bullshit. It is personal. If a woman rejects me, it is personal. Well, no, it's not. But the tool is to understand that you are okay as you are. Your natural state is confident, is worthy, and that your sexual value, or intellectual value, or your social value, notwithstanding her approval, is okay. You're fine. Really, you're fine. And I have to say this over and over and over again until the guy gets it. He goes, you know what? You're right. I am okay. But there's a spiritual shift that has to take place in the man to understand that rejection or dismissiveness or any rudeness or disrespect from a woman is less about him than it is about her. Of course, if you're being a dick, own that. But,
yeah. but advice.
Yeah, if you're being a dick, own it. So there's a spiritual, and it goes deep, a movement here or an effort to understand that you need to take that power you gave her to hurt you. Because it's a little boy power. It's a 12-year-old to 13-year-old boy power that you've given her, because only she can tell you if you're good enough. What's funny is that they're doctors, pilots, lawyers, you know, the powerful men who never have this happen anywhere in their professional life, because nobody else has the power to make them feel bad. Mm. It's this romantic, intimate, sexual realm where we have been programmed. The social programming and biological programming we have as boys to give that power away.
Do you think women are really that aware that they have this little container of whoopass? Or no. Do you think it's just, we're just coasting along going, yeah, no, not the mood.
No. They know they have it. They don't know why they have it. And what I tell men is that once they find out they have it, and men want to know, why do they keep using it? It's because they're testing you. They don't want it. they never wanted to have that cannibal best. They don't want power. They don't want control. They don't want to manipulate. They don't want to emasculate. That's not a conscious choice women are making. Mm. You gave it to them. And because of your refusal or inability to take it back and own your own power, she has no choice but to take the lead and keep challenging you. Mm-hmm. It's a harsh awakening for a guy, because then he kicks himself. He goes, you know, I wish somebody would have told me this 20 years ago.
Right. Yeah. Do you think that there is a movement towards, because I know you work with adult men, what about younger guys, like, you know, our boys, like, where are they going to get to learn all this?
Well, outside of the sexual relationship realm, they get to learn masculine strength and masculine virtue through other men. And there is a lot more movements these days of men helping boys. One of my colleagues, Jeff Fallon, focuses specifically on teenage boys and their dads and helping them in that realm. And so there is a movement. It's not very big, because a lot of men still don't know how to teach boys about what it means to be men outside of the romantic sexual realm. We're still preoccupied with a lot of manliness is the fact we have penises, right? And then that's used for reproduction. Instead of getting back into those other eight blocks of intimacy, honesty, authenticity, integrity, right? Emotional connection, all of that stuff is part of what it means to be a man and to be healthy. And there aren't that many men who are comfortable talking to boys like that, nor able to model it.
Mm, right. Well, there certainly seems to be a lot of confusion around it. Like, and I know, and I've talked about this on my show before, you know, I've spent a lot of time talking with my son about, and being a single mother, mm-hmm. you know, I wonder how that's impacted my son as well. Although he says I've always been more like a dad than a mom anyway.
What does that mean?
Well, I haven't been, I'm not very, you know, huggy. He is way more emotional than I am. I tend to have like two feelings.
You punch him in the arm, good morning.
Kind of, I have. And he's like, can I have a hug? And I'm like, dude, come on. And I don't know how much of that is sort of offsetting that lack of a male presence, and how much of that is just me being sometimes more dude than girl. I don't know. But I do watch this change in him over time as he's trying to understand what this role of a dude is in the world. Like, how are guys supposed to act? How are they supposed to show up? What is safe? What is not safe? Can we hold the door open? Can't we hold the door open? Like, and it's just, I find we're in this horrible flux. And so one woman doesn't like it, so men are supposed to stop, so women like me who like it don't get to experience it. And that's not okay either. But how do men know the difference? Like, it's not like we have a sign saying it's okay to hold the door open. So yeah. It's so,
don't get me started on that. Go ahead.
So, you know, I find like it's so difficult to really start to break down and understand what that means. And we don't have to do it as women. We don't have to go around and justify why we're women, how we're women, that sort of thing. Like, we just are.
Yeah, part of the problem with the dynamic you just described is that all the men who are wondering whether they should pay the bill or hold the door are still measuring their worthiness and their effectiveness and their goodness by what a woman's response is to what they did. Now, this is going to go over wrong, but I'm going to say it anyway. He needs to stop giving a fuck what she thinks about whether he pays the bill or holds the door or tells her she's pretty. He needs to decide who he is and what he believes and what he desires for himself, and to give without conditions, give without strings, and just be who he is in his integrity, and stop measuring whether I did it right or whether she liked it. This is the chasing women problem. The more you get caught up in trying to measure whether you did it right or are worthy through outside measurements, and this is inside out thinking through Pransky and Michael Neal, the more you do that, the more screwed up your life is going to feel. The more eggshell walking and tentativeness, and I don't know where I stand, and I'm getting mixed signals from women. Screw that. Decide who you are. A guy told me today that for the last 4 years, he goes out, he takes his wife's bags, a cup of coffee, opens the car door for her. He's already warmed the car up. This guy's been married 20 years, right? And the routine is that he goes to kiss her. She turns at the last second. He gets to peck her on the cheek. And she looked at him and said, you know, you don't have to keep doing it. It's so obligatory. And he's afraid to tell her, you know, sweetie, I'm about to kiss you on the lips. Don't turn your head. It's going to last 3 seconds maximum. I love you. And then do it. Just fucking do it. Well, what if she doesn't like it? Who fucking cares if she doesn't like it?
Yeah, and I know that, spend your rest of your life like that.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, but he's so far back on his heels about still trying to do something that works or that mm-hmm. she likes. And he's married 20 years to a woman who no longer lets him kiss her on the lips when he sends her off in the morning in a warm car. Give me a break.
Yeah, God, I want somebody to warm up my car. I don't like being cold. That'd be fantastic. And if I got a kiss at the end, even better.
Well, I'll email your new boyfriend. I'll give him some tips.
No, I got to find one first. You know, it was interesting because my son went out with a woman and phoned ahead of time, said I'm running about 5 minutes late, shows up. She's pissed off that he's late. She's not ready. They go to the restaurant. She's ordering like the most expensive things on the menu. And he was training. And so he was just like, yeah, I'm not going to eat. And she knew this ahead of time. And then she just kept getting more and more abusive. So he just went, see ya, and got up and walked out. Mm. And she sat at the bar for over an hour waiting for somebody to bring her a wallet because she didn't even bring her own money. And he got criticized by some women. I'm like, well, that is a rock star move. He knows what he wants. He knows how he can get treated. And I think it's fantastic. And I think if we all showed up a little bit more in our own integrity and our worthiness, we would just end up with much better interactions and relationships.
I agree. I know we don't have much time, but I teach self-reliance. Part of my program is about self-reliance. And that gets a bum rap because people think it's arrogant independence and it doesn't value interdependence. Baloney. Self-reliance, self-esteem, and confidence is the only place from which a man can be generous and unattached to outcomes and actually have an agape style of love for women. So getting confident, self-reliant, and independent is the number one thing I teach men. Before you can have effective relationship, you better be good with yourself. And that's another way of saying what you just said.
Yeah. Well, and at the end of the day, you're going to be with you. Then that's it. So how do people find you again?
GoodGuys2GreatMen.com with the number 2 in between. That's the best way.
Yeah, I love that name, by the way. I just think it's fantastic. It says it all.
Yeah. Thank you.
Super cool. And do you have any sort of like last comment to say that somebody can take away with?
Last comment to the men who are watching. I just want to say you're okay. One guy told me, I love at the end of every video you make, you say you're okay. You're okay. As you are, your default state is okay. So start acting like it.
I like it. And that will be our challenge for the week too. I just want to thank you so much for being on the show and sharing all of this and for all the great work you do in the world. You know, when we have healthier men, we have healthier worlds, we have healthier relationships. So from all the women in the world, thank you for helping men get there. So thanks.
Thank you for having me, Allison. I enjoyed this. You're fun.
Me too. Thanks. And as for everybody listening, before our next show, I was wondering if you would be able to maybe just take some time in your life to figure out that you're okay. Like, what can you let go of in your day to day that is telling you you're not okay, so that you can move into the space of worthiness, move into the space of feeling okay? Because if you're not questioning something, what is the point of believing in it?